Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Glenn Mason said a long time ago at the University of Minnesota, you need a pair and a spare.
And welcome into the Pair and a Spare podcast for those on the inside. We are taping this at 3 in the morning because we have so long. This might be a marathon-type podcast. This might be 10 hours. We have so much to get to. Ryan Burns, GopherIllustrated.com. Chip Scoggins from the Star Tribune. How we doing, guys?
It's a lot to get to.
It's unbelievable.
It's a boring week in college football, huh?
Unbelievable. I said last week, like, hey, we got to make sure we talk about the James Franklin and Kirk Ferentz back and forth. Like, oh, that's out. I mean, that's like the 12th topic. We might touch on that at some point today, but it's there. So much has happened in the interim.
Was it scuba? Is that what they called it?
Scuba was one where you, that, like, the code
word. Fake, yeah.
Scuba was one of them.
Fake
yeah.
an injury?
Ferentz
scuba?
Had a couple of more. I loved James Franklin coming to his press conference like the town crier. he had the scroll and the screen. He's like, before we talk, this guy's our best player. He got hurt. Here's another best player. Well, how does this make sense? And I happen to agree with him there, but we really don't have time to talk about that today.
Yep. We'll see if we can get to it at the end. There's a lot. Fresher things we have to talk about.
We'll mention it for sure. We want to thank Northern Lids for helping us out on the podcast every single week. NorthernLids.com to check out their entire selection of hats. I'm considering, guys, having a hat that says culture over skill and sending that to the football building at the University of Minnesota, or sloganeering and sending it down to Lincoln. But we thank Northern Lids and northernlids.com. Check out their entire selection. They've got some awesome stuff. All right. Should we start with the football? Or do you want to start with the juice?
Let's start with drama.
You want to start with the tea?
We love drama.
I think we're going to start a segment called
Chip loves the tea.
This could be another sponsor if anybody wants to jump out there. Big Ten Tea Time. It's Big Ten Tea because we mentioned James Franklin and Kirk Ferentz going back last week. We'll start with PJ Fleck postgame, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
And let's go. We've got the background, of course, is that the sloganeering thing reared its head again this past week, and that comes from Big Ten Media Day. Scott Frost. Which, in his defense, how I remember it, Burnsy, and I don't know how you remember it,
okay,
but I remember it that he was, like, asked about it. I don't think he just went up on the podium and said, oh, by the way, we like Adrian Martinez, and anybody that uses slogans is stupid.
Like, yeah.
Which is how I think it's being taken. I think he was asked about it on the podium. Hey, do you have any slogans or whatever? And he obviously said, no, if I do that, we've got the wrong guys. I'm come from Coach Osborne, which, by the way, Scott, we know. You played for Coach Osborne. Everybody knows about Tom Osborne. We get it. And it's pretty clear whether that was intended for PJ Fleck or not.
Well, who else is it going to be directed at if you're going to be talking about a Big Ten coach?
But every coach, Big Ten coach, but just generally.
I'm
just saying, regardless. It's pretty clear PJ thought it was directed at him, and PJ responded in kind after the game, invoking the Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high, and then proceeded to not be anywhere near the high road whatsoever, which, by the way, I think is tremendous.
Absolutely.
I think we're starting the podcast with it. We love all of it. But what was your reaction? You were there in the post-game press conference right after my post-game interview. I texted you after. I said, how did it go? You said he used the word culture 18 times in 17 minutes.
Yes.
And he was on one on Saturday after the Gophers' victory.
Well, it's funny because you had him on Wednesday doing the Fox 9 show, and Hobie asked him about it, and Fleck takes the high road, doesn't really say anything, and then he beats him, and then – we're 4-1 against Nebraska. Culture, culture, culture. Culture versus skill. Culture wins.
That was my favorite part. Yeah. I'm happy to be 4-1 against Nebraska.
Just slide that one in there.
Doesn't matter. Yep.
Well, the way he signed it off with you, too. Row the boat, Schema, and go Gophers. Just a little bit of twisting the knife there. But again, you're 4-1. Good for you. I mean, don't take the high road anymore. I mean, again, he talked about it at Media Days. You mentioned it. It's just, if Scott Frost wants to make statements like that, like, I can even go back to the Kirk Ferentz thing where, we're going to take all three timeouts and take the pig. Good for you.
100%. And PJ handled that perfectly.
Absolutely.
In saying, hey, it's a rivalry. Stuff's going to come up.
That's what we need. Yes. We need some bad blood. We need some chippiness. We need some verbal volleys here. And the thing that we don't know, we see that kind of those public things.
Right.
What we don't know, but coaches know, is what is said to recruits on the recruiting trail.
100%.
And you know darn well that things get back to coach. And I'm not saying that PJ doesn't do it to them.
Of course he does.
Coaches tell kids all the time when they're recruiting the same players to go, why you should come here and not there. So I would be willing to bet money that there are things, and Brian, you know a lot more than we do.
I can tell you, after the game, before he got to Justin, he was talking to the recruits, and he said the same exact thing. If you want to look at our culture, what we did here versus what the skill position or the skill guys were, because technically, and then what Fleck's talking about is, Nebraska has finished higher in the recruiting rankers the last few years, and Fleck knows that. And Fleck Fleck would tell you he never looks at it, and he doesn't care about recruiting.
Of course they do.
But of course he does.
Let me ask you this, though. And I understand his premise because he was banking that off recruiting rankings.
Yeah. Sure.
When I watched that game, the more talented team won.
Other than the tight end, who I would love
the
to
tight
have.
End is
Austin
great.
Allen, is tremendous.
That guy's amazing.
I didn't see this great discrepancy in talent.
No.
Now, that might be developing him and not based off the star rankings.
Yeah.
But
I think that's what it is. And I think he likes to have, he certainly likes to play the underdog role.
Of course.
Which,
of course.
By the way,
yes.
They were underdogs
yes.
in that game.
Yep.
And so, and this culture thing, this isn't going out of school. When they beat Auburn in the Outback Bowl, he said the same thing to his team. And now that was even a little bit more different because, I think we could find the numbers. He said,
something like 44 stars
correct.
Versus
yeah.
our 4-4
and Matt
stars.
Campbell says the same thing, five-star culture versus yeah. five-star talent.
That's what they said when he beat Oklahoma.
This isn't new. I get what you're saying.
But I look at that defensive line.
I know.
You tell me that there's better defensive alignment on Nebraska or Gophers.
Yeah,
no
I
comparison
agree.
To me.
I agree.
But it's part of the thing.
The whole bit. It's like yeah. Helmet School, Memorial Stadium, Tom yeah. Osborne, the yeah. whole bit, black shirts, and little old Minnesota. There we go.
How is black shirts not a slogan to me? Well, how is it, if you think of black shirt, isn't that the whole thing? Isn't it a slogan to describe your defense?
I suppose.
Isn't it?
I think it's
a gimmick,
something?
I guess.
Yeah.
It's and not true
yeah.
For the last 15 years. But, I don't know. But, I loved it. And I love the Ferentz thing.
Yeah.
When I saw that Zoom, I was like, oh my God. I mean, because like I said, to PJ's credit, we all remember, and you remember this, Chip, when Bielema goes for two against Brewster.
Yes.
What Brewster should have done is said, hey, they're kicking our ass. They do whatever.
You can do whatever you want.
Victor go
take
to
it on the chin.
That's competition. That's alpha males doing alpha male things.
Mm-hmm.
That's putting it out on the table and seeing who's is bigger. That's just what they do.
Yeah.
It's to compare this to real life is. Out.
No, this is not real life. No, this
not
is
not real life. And so I thought he handled the Iowa thing perfectly when, again, he was asked about that 8 months later, and he said, they can do it. It's a rivalry. Things happen. And even Ferentz said, I'm not necessarily proud of that, but you do things in the heat of battle.
And that's the thing about rivalries. It gives another layer of things for fans to talk about,
yes.
media to talk and write about. This is what you want. I mean, you don't want, they're great. We love them.
Right.
Have
a lot of respect for the program.
Have some animosity here. This
yeah.
is what Big Ten should be. And you don't want it to get ugly, and we'll get into what happened at my school
mm-hmm.
later. You don't want that.
Is your brother, is he out of jail yet for his role?
Did he throw the golf ball or the French mustard?
I got to send bail money for the mustard bottle. Who brings mustard to a, they must have stolen from concession.
I have a lot of questions. Yeah.
We can get into the conspiracy theories about that, but.
We can also get into why mustard's better than ketchup as a condiment. But, you want that animosity. This is great, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
When Gophers go down there next year, this is going to come up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, it's fun fodder.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with it with PJ going back. And if Frost feels that way and it helps him, in recruiting, or if he thinks that's what,
Is Frost going to even be there?
That buyout's too big.
I think he will be. I think he will be.
That fan base is...
Well, here's my question, Bernsie.
Yeah.
If the Golden Child quarterback Tom Osborne Heisman Trophy winner can't do it, what do you do? Where do you go?
Well, if you ask...
$20 million.
Again, you ask the Nebraska fan base and the donors, they'll throw enough money at it and try to fix it. I'm with you, though. I mean, would it surprise you at any point when you look at Nebraska going forward that if they were to beat Iowa or Wisconsin?
It would not surprise me at all.
I think they're a good team. They just find ways to put themselves in bad situations.
Yeah. I watched them against Michigan, and I thought, all right, they lost a close game or lose a close game, but you can see that they're getting better.
I think they are.
But then you watch that game Saturday and just the way they played and the mistakes they made and just
–
you're like, they're just undisciplined.
We can
you
get into that, but it's just
– But I don't think – his buyout's $20 million, right?
Yes.
That's a lot of money.
In today's climate with everything, I just can't imagine.
Well, unless you're Auburn or LSU, unless you're in the SEC, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
Because they fired Gus Malzahn and paid him $20 million bucks last year. Auburn.
Yeah.
I don't know what Orgeron's buyout was, but I'm guessing it was fairly big. But
if he's getting the full buyout, I assume he is.
Yeah. He is, and that's where, again, the whole culture versus skill. Again, it's funny that Fleck says that, but then he also tells it. He literally, I can tell you, from asking many different recruits and parents that were there, that's the exact same damn thing he told all the recruits in that room was, you want to play for you? Who do you want to play for? Look at the culture, the culture. And I can tell you, I mean, for some of those guys, that made a real impact.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Because the players love it. You know, like your colleague at the Star Tribune wrote the papers, wrote the story, Jim Suhan, saying, well, this is an insult to his players, Mike. I promise you, his players don't think that. His players love it.
Well, I saw some of the guys on social media just quote tweet that, you know, laughing emojis or whatever. I mean, they for as much crap as everyone gives the whole row the boat thing and the culture, those guys live at 365.
Right.
Like, you can say what you will, but it's like those guys are immersed in it and believe in it, and especially in year five. That's the way to go.
And we talked to those players enough that they regurgitate it.
Correct.
And so
even Jack Gibbons hasn't even been here that long, and he knows all the language.
And the thing is, if a guy doesn't, he's going to the transfer portal.
Yeah, it's not going to work
for
him.
And I don't know that any of the guys that have hit it has just said, this is not for me, or because it's playing time or whatever. But no, in talking to those players, and that's the thing. People would ask me to comment. I don't control what another person writes. It's everybody has their own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the way I've always approached PJ is with, and he said from day one, I'm not for everybody.
Right.
I try not to look at or listen to, not listen to, but his slogans and the way he goes about it. What I judge the program is on wins, losses, how it looks, not what he says, because it's not for me.
Right.
It's for an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old, 21-year-old player. Mm-hmm. So it's not, row the boat's not for me.
Right.
You know, I'm a reporter covering or columnist covering the team. I'll praise them when they deserve it, criticize them when they deserve it, analyze, where the program is from kind of a 30,000-foot view. And so that's how I've always approached it. So the slogans and the salesman, it doesn't have effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the right way to approach it, because it's not for me, right? It's not intended for me. It's intended for players and probably fans too, to get them.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of tweets about that. I was like, is anybody a fan down there at the Star Tribune? Well,
no.
I root for stories.
Yeah.
I root for one team, only one sports team of all sports. That's the Tennessee Vols. Everybody else, I root for good stories. It's hard rooting for the Vols this week, but I root for the Vols. But no, I root for good stories.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, I just want good stories, compelling stories, drama, that kind of things.
And what we're talking about today is a great story.
And it's
two Big Ten coaches going back and forth. One of them, kind of laying in the weeds all summer when you got another guy taking shots. Like, here's what I'll say. If Minnesota, let's say, beats Iowa and Iowa City, do you think for a second PJ's leaving there with any timeouts?
No.
Absolutely.
He might take
not.
A penalty for calling two in a row and going, oh, I thought we had an extra.
You can pull a Sam Darnold.
Yes. And that's, again, we go back to it. That's, Chip, you said it perfectly. That's what makes it compelling, the extra stuff, the hatred, the animosity, the BS, the whatever you want to call it. That's, it makes it more interesting. Like, when you play, what's going to be interesting about the Gophers-Illinois game, for example?
Yeah.
And it's not saying anything about Illinois. I'm just saying, like, is there ever anything, like, interesting about that? No, not really, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Part about, like, most of the Big Ten West outside of Illinois is all these coaches have been together and played against each other now for 4 or 5 years. So they've had a chance to develop the animosity, develop the storylines.
Well, it is interesting that you've had this group of coaches come in who are recruiters.
Yes.
And really kind of have a unique way of running Brohm, PJ, Frost.
Yep.
That really have kind of big personalities.
Right.
Or strong personalities. Is that the way to say it?
Yeah, sure.
And a
presence.
Aggressive recruiters.
Yep.
And so I think you're going to have that inherent friction where I don't like the way he's doing it. I don't like the way this guy's doing it.
They're recruiting a lot of the same guys.
So it's added some spice to the Big Ten West, because you have kind of these, I don't know if conflicts is the right word, but just personality clashes.
Right.
Let's reflect
since he's been here, has elevated the recruiting that were when Kill was here, you're competing against Louisiana Monroe and Troy. Now, every single, essentially every single recruit, you're going against Big Ten schools, which is what you should be doing. I mean, even at the game on Saturday, Minnesota had a Nebraska commit there with a Minnesota commit, and it turns out the Nebraska kid decommitted after the game, and Minnesota's now trying to get him. So that's the way it should be.
So the kid that just decommitted, that he was at the game?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he was a Nebraska commit.
Yeah.
So that was...
Flew up from Florida to see it all.
So, but he was visiting as a Minnesota recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And after lots of prayer,
culture.
He is prayer to the culture gods. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yep. But that's great.
That's See? What you
I
want.
Mean, that's the tea. The Big Ten tea. It's open for sponsorship. We're spilling it all over the place. And it's all, and by the way, because of how the schedule sets up, it's only going to get better.
Yeah.
I mean, the games that are coming up, Wisconsin, Purdue, Iowa, Minnesota, all these games, same in the East. Like, I love how the Big Ten has done the NFL thing where play the important games in November.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all
for sure.
Building up to this.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be tremendous. So please tell a friend about the Parent of Spare podcast because we're going to be here every single week breaking all of it down. Anything else you want to say on our Big Ten Tea Time segment?
No, let's talk some football because that was a.
I'm spent.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything left. I don't have anything left. The Gophers did win the game, by the way. They beat Nebraska. Let's start. For me, and that's how I started with PJ, was I wanted to talk about the defense.
Yeah.
Because that, to me, was the story. Obviously, we're going to get to the offense and what they did in the first half, and we'll talk about everything offensively, but the defense. We've got about a month of a sample size, Bernsey, of what this defense is, what this defense can be, and my thinking is you look at what David Bell just did to Iowa.
Yep.
We're going to get to that one. You look at what Adrian Martinez has done against it. What I like about this defense is, it's like, okay, we know who your best players are. Your best players are going to make some plays.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Ohio State and Bowling Green, your best players are not going to kill us, and we're not going to give up an 80-yard play. Your tight end can make some ridiculous catches, but we're going to make you earn literally every last inch, and if you stumble on the way to the goal line on fourth and goal, that's not our problem. Your thoughts on the defense?
I think they're a pretty good defense.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, from where they were last year to where they are, even to start the year against Ohio State where it was big play after big play, you know, we've seen 3-4 weeks of it where it's they give up in between the 20s, some 20, 25-yard gains. But when they get –
which happens in college football.
Of course.
Right. That's college football.
They have players too.
Yep.
And I think they have some pretty good players in the Nebraska offense. But, I mean, that defensive line is just the stalwart for everything.
Bernsey, Guardsy, deepest Gopher defensive line since –
Carl Eller.
I mean, I think they're legitimately. I'd love to see the snaps, and Burns, you maybe have done it.
Yeah.
They're playing nine guys and not just, hey, go in there for a play or two. Like, literally, you're part of the rotation.
They play eight guys somewhere between 30 and 70% of the snaps.
That's, I have not seen that in my time here.
Well, eight guys playing 20 plus snaps a game on the D line.
I can't recall.
That's like an NFL.
Like, you think about
rotation.
Like, MJ Anderson is a nice player who's making a lot of plays. And,
yeah.
He's playing like 25 of the 70 snaps.
Yeah, and they have done a good – I mean, obviously the transfer portal was good to them.
Yeah.
They've also recruited really well on the defensive line, especially in recent years, and you're starting to see that come to fruition.
And I've always – coaches have always said that's the hardest position, particularly at Minnesota, because like the really true super, you know, blue chip for it, they're going to the big schools, and it's – it felt like traditionally in my time on covering it is get the 210-pound – athlete,
the Thierin Cochrans of the world,
and hope in 3 years he's
PC.
And hope he can be a player,
right?
Whereas I don't know if they're more ready made now that they're getting. There still has to be some development because I don't think you're getting the 5-star defensive lineman, but they've done a really good job of creating depth, hitting the portal, and getting the right fit for what they're doing. And it all starts right there. I mean, I looked at it yesterday. Is it they're averaging giving up 20 points a game now, which is they're 36th nationally in scoring defense after giving up 45 in the season opener. So they've really.
And they were the worst run defense among college football teams last year.
Yeah.
Now they're the number two run defense in the Big Ten so far. Ain't that
something? That's your defensive line.
It's wild. And you got Jack Gibbons behind.
He's been really good.
That just cleans everything up.
He's the best tackling linebacker since who for Minnesota?
Tackling? I mean, you got, like, Cashman was in there.
Yeah.
You got, I would say, Damian Wilson would be in there. I mean, he's in that group. I mean,
he's been a really valuable, important addition.
Well, and here's the thing about the defensive line in general. Like, this goes all the way back to spring, is PJ saying, like, we've got a lot of guys, and we need them to buy into the fact that they're not all going to play all the time. And they have. Besides Keontae Shad, right?
He transferred out to Oregon State.
Right, so he transferred. But everybody else is like, you can tell, like, I'm down on the field. And, like, I have the same vibe from when, like, the offense a couple of years ago. Like, that offense legitimately did not care who scored.
Yeah.
Like, Tyler, Rashad, Chris, Mo, Rodney, Shannon. Like, it was, you want to talk about culture, to use that word. Like, someone, even when Cole Kramer threw the touchdown pass, Tanner's first one out there.
Yeah.
Like, they really don't care. The linemen, I don't think they care. Like, mm-hmm. they are going crazy when everybody, when anybody makes a play.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a credit to the coaches, Rossi, but then the position coach,
Chad Wilk,
who sounds like a heck of a motivator. I don't know him.
I don't either.
He's a
good
guy.
He's very passionate.
Well, it also helps. I think the defensive line for the first time in the Fleck era has had a repeat D line coach. This is the first time. We've seen like Marcus West, Jim Panagos,
Bryce Pop.
And then we've had Wilton back to back.
Yeah, and how much do you think when you start having success and you say, hey, this works?
Exactly.
And I'm making plays.
You got to have the success first. No
Rossi
question.
Rossi and Fleck have talked about that at length the last couple weeks, where they're starting to see that, hey, we bought in now, where they thought the first 2 weeks the D line was like too individualized, that people were caring. Well, the last 3 weeks here, 4 weeks, we've seen the D line step it up, and now no one cares.
Well, yeah, it's
they're having success and they bought in.
You said what MJ Anderson's getting 20. But they're 22 impactful snaps for the most part. You know,
I mean, we probably said Thomas his name Rush. seven times on the broadcast.
I mean, Thomas Rush, it feels like he gets a sack every time he goes in, but it's not that way, obviously. But when you make big splash plays, whatever number of snaps you're getting, that makes you feel good and like, okay, this works. I'm getting the most out of me, and I think they're probably buying into that right now.
Well, even Boye Mafe has turned it on the last few weeks.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, after the first 2 weeks, doesn't have a sack. Rossi calls him out in the media a little bit. Last 3-4 weeks, he's been tremendous. I think Pro Football Focus had him at like 8 pressures on Saturday. Now, he didn't get home on them, but you can tell it affected Martinez.
Yeah.
And there was a drive in the second half where it's 3rd and long because Boye Mafe makes 2 stops against the run.
Right.
You know, this is a guy that's finally buying in, and he's got the potential to be a high NFL draft pick.
And I think Joe Rossi deserves a lot of credit. I mean, that scheme Saturday to kind of keep –
Adrian Martinez
contained to the
worst rushing output of his entire career. Yeah. Can you name the last? If you can, I will buy coffee.
I'm cheating because I listen to Gopher Gridiron. I listen to your other podcast. Yeah, go ahead, Chipper. This is a question for Chip.
In 2018, Martinez was last held to negative rushing yards. Can you name the team that did it to him?
Gophers.
Bethune-Cookman.
Really?
Of all teams, it was Bethune-Cookman. I mean, Martinez hadn't been held under like 38 rushing yards all year. He was averaging 65 a game. And then Minnesota just puts a cage around him, and he has negative 17 rushing. He never really escaped the pocket all day.
Didn't even try.
No.
When he had the one run on the 3rd down, who got him? Howden got him, I think. Because that's his territory. Red zone's his territory. They're going to try to run him.
10 rushing touchdowns
coming
into the game.
And they tried to run him there on that 3rd down. Might have gotten in. Might not have. Really close.
Yeah.
But someone was there for him. And that was really the one time they really tried to run him there.
Yeah,
I would have, by the way, just said, oh, that would have been Bethune-Cookman.
Yeah.
You're just blowing your mind. But I'm an honest guy.
Yeah,
I want people
like
to know that I'm honest.
Right.
Go ahead.
But, you think back to that opener, and Ohio State's athletes are obviously a different level than what they've seen since, but just the bad angles, the misalignments, the kind of just the self-destructive nature that they had in that.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio State made you pay because they're so fast. But we just haven't seen. I mean, they've tackled better. Seem like they're in the right places.
Yeah,
they know their assignments.
That's it for me.
Yeah, they're executing at a much higher level.
Well, and you can tell, like Rossi. I mean, why Rossi got the job is. I mean, he's a smart coach, and we've been to enough practices. Like he talks about details all the time. That's not just like a thing. Like if they mess up a detail in practice, like he seems like a good dude, right? In the media, he goes off.
Yes.
Like if you miss a detail, like he is going crazy at practice. Like this is what we're doing. This is yelling at the scout team if they're not aligned exactly how they're supposed to be aligned. Like that's not lip service. Like, and I'm not saying anything out of school. Like he's coaching them.
Yeah.
He's coaching them hard. And what I like about it though is like even go back to the Purdue game. Like you could tell all of them are like they're gonna move the ball. That's just how it's going to be. David Bell's going to get a bunch of catches. I mean, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. They went from the 2-yard line to the 50 in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to make plays. The key is you got to get back up. You got to hold them. And Rossi's talked about this forever with Nebraska. I remember this going back to last year. They score a lot. They'll have a big play, and then they'll score the next play.
Yeah.
You're discombobulated. You're pissed. You're not paying attention. But they have schooled it into him, like, get reset, get settled in, get the call, do the job, and let's just make him earn it. And I give him credit for it because it's become part of the identity of this team and this defense.
Well, and that's why they call him, what they call him, the guru. The guru. I mean, I think players recognize that he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Listen.
Yeah.
Apply it. And it's not just, you're not just speaking and throwing stuff out there. And you see a buy-in. I mean, it seems like all three levels are kind of connected. And the linebackers are clean up a lot of tackles because the defensive line is playing good. Mm-hmm. The secondary's playing well.
Yeah, hanging in there.
You know, I mean, you're going to give up plays. There. I mean, it's just – that's the thing. Sometimes I'll watch a game like, gosh, you know, they're giving up some plays, and then you have to realize that's college football.
Right.
I mean, it's just geared that way. I mean, it drives people crazy, but watch college football on a Saturday and see how many plays every team. Alabama gives up plays. The only team that doesn't give up plays is Georgia.
Yeah.
That defense is.
But to your point, there's like two teams every year that have everything.
Yeah.
The rest of them don't.
Yeah. Sometimes you feel like they're hanging by a thread, but then.
Right.
This defense is, I mean, to me, they're the story. And without a doubt, the defensive line, because we've just seen Burnsy traditionally where that has been such a deficiency for them. Just not having enough guys and not having enough legitimate Big Ten defensive linemen.
Well, you want to win the West, you better win the trenches.
And that's what is still to be determined. And that's where I want to see. That's why that Iowa game is going to be big. That's why that Wisconsin game is going to be big. Because like those are the teams that even when we thought Minnesota was going to play a little bully ball, which they've done against Nebraska now, you know, they're 6-5
they've
against Nebraska.
They've whipped them physically. Yeah.
So, you know, going back to Kill, you know, they have. That's exactly right. So you thought, wow, this is a physical team. Then you got Iowa, Wisconsin. You see, well, that's where the physicality really is.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. That's, to me, the biggest test is, can this line do that against an Iowa offensive line, which isn't performing to their normal standards? Same with Wisconsin.
Right.
But I've also heard that a lot in my 11 years.
Yeah,
it's like,
right, yeah.
This isn't the same Wisconsin line, or it's not the same Iowa line, whatever. Like, but that's what we talked about 25 minutes ago. That's why it's going to be awesome, because we'll get to see. We think we have a hypothesis about this defense. It's better than what we've seen in years past, and now we're going to get to see it against the two teams that have owned this division for the last decade.
Well, that's where you look at the remaining games in the schedule. Nebraska's offense is better than any of the offenses that we're going to see over the next 6 weeks. I mean,
theoretically.
All, in theory, yeah. I mean, yeah. Nebraska coming into the game was the number one running offense in the Big Ten. They left the game still number one, even though they only rushed for like 130 rushing yards. They were averaging like 230 coming in, and Minnesota shuts down the run. Now you get Maryland without their top two options in skill positions. Northwestern is a disaster offensively. Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin. So in theory, if you can look at the last 2 weeks against the two best offenses in the Big Ten West, probably in Purdue and Nebraska, you held them to 20 or 40 total points, 20 per game. If you give up 20 per game and going forward here and your offense can figure it out like we started to see, especially in that first half, I mean, you got a shot at this thing.
Is that a transition to talk offense?
It was very organic.
I like it. Anything else you want to say defensive-wise?
No. We got to get to the offense because that felt like a hallelujah.
Yes. And what we've been talking about for 6 weeks.
Trust the quarterback.
Trust the quarterback. It helps to have Chris Ottman-Bell.
And guess what? He's going to throw an interception every now and then.
You got to live with it. Well, and that's what I love about Brahm, and we're going to talk about it as well, is that whatever you say about it, he said it after Minnesota, he's like, we throw the ball 100 times a game. There's going to be bad plays. Like,
yeah.
You just got to live with them and move on. Like, you're going to make mistakes. But that's for in a minute from now. 100% the offensive approach we've wanted to see forever. And really, truthfully, the one I thought we would see at some point, because you just knew – We've talked about it forever, how PJ does non-conference games, how he wants to win games. Like, you knew he knew what they had in the room with Chris Ottman-Bell, with Dalen Wright, with Michael Brown-Stevens, with Brevin Spanford. They had too much there to just let it go by the wayside. And, Chipper, we'll start with you. I loved the approach.
Yeah, and part of it is we've seen that before. When he gets in Big Ten, he opens up. But the bigger issue is just the personnel. Not knowing Irving, your running backs, and what they can give you. And
right.
Your best players are your wide receiver. I mean, Chris
especially
Ottman,
at this point of the year.
Correct.
Chris Ottman-Bell is so good in tight quarters.
Yeah. That's the healthiest he's finally been all year.
I mean, that guy makes more contested catches look routine, you know? And the thing I like about him, too, is, like, take deep shots because there's feels like it's 50-50 shot he's going to get a pass interference call on it.
Yeah.
Or make the catch.
Because he'll fight for the ball.
Yeah.
And
he's physical.
More often than not, he'll come down
with
it.
Yeah. And so I like the approach. I like that they came out. And it was a good balance. It was a, it felt like it was a 50-50 balance for most of the first half, right?
It was.
I wasn't at the game, but I just it felt like that's how the offense should function. Play action, throw the ball deep, let Tanner get into a rhythm.
That's it.
And then, you know, you still ran the ball a fair amount. It wasn't like you just completely abandoned it and you're going, you know, air raid on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Samford really did a heck of a job calling that the game. And then, you know what? I didn't have a really issue with the first thing. I mean, he was thrown into double coverage. The second pick was bad. That's a really bad throw.
But again, like you
said, you know what? You can't go into a shell and just say, that's it. We can't do it.
Right.
Stick with it. I mean, he's going to make mistakes. I'm sorry. That's what college quarterbacks do. They make mistakes.
And part of it after that was they got themselves in, because of that interception, they were in a field position, meat grinder forever.
Yeah.
And so then you're kind of stuck there. But I loved, and I want to talk more about the first half, but coming out of the third quarter and going, we're still here. We're still doing it, and I liked it. Just let's try to dagger him. I mean, there's no reason to let anybody hang around.
That's a fantastic play by Cam Taylor, Brett, on that first interception. He's beat, and he somehow – he recovers tremendously, accelerates, not only gets a hand on it, runs right through it and catches it.
Was that double coverage, though, Burnsy, or was it just a great play by the corner?
Well, the throw is he's trying to drop it in the hole between the safety and the corner. The corner's beat.
It wasn't necessarily double. He just makes a great play.
No, he just recovers and makes. I mean, Cam Taylor Britt made like four plays that single handedly saved that game.
Yeah.
He's the one on the flea flicker that made the made the play. Shed Chris Ottenbell in the fourth quarter on a Kai Thomas run.
Yeah.
Makes it. I mean, Cam Taylor Britt is going to be an all Big Ten player.
Yeah.
I don't have. Well, here's my question. You were down on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the press box, the wind didn't seem like an issue.
The wind was a problem in the third quarter, yes.
And that's where people are like, well, yeah, the ball hung there. And then people are like, well, yeah, the wind was whipping out of the end zone there. And Tanner was trying to throw right into the teeth of it.
It was a weird wind it would just kind of come out of nowhere. It would blow. It was basically blowing like from where the visitors sit to you guys in the press box. It was kind of crisscross.
Cross it, yeah.
And okay. So it – 100%. I think it affected the field goal. I think it affected. I think that there's a reason why Nebraska wanted the wind at their back. And what? No. What am I? I think I'm confusing this. Yeah, I don't know why Nebraska would have taken that. They must not have. I don't know why they would have kicked it that way.
Have a wind coach. You go.
I guess they need a wind coordinator. Pay them $400,000 a year. The weather wind coordinator. The wind was. It wasn't like a constant, but it was there enough where it did have some impact on some things.
You know, you mentioned the flea flicker, and at the time I thought, I don't know. But then I said, you know what? You can't sit here and harp on him to be more creative and take shots and then come back and say,
Chip,
why'd you do it?
You have arrived at the correct answer on the flea flicker.
Bernie
and I are in agreement on that.
Yeah, at the time I was like, you know, it felt odd considering everything that was happening. But then, the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? Do it.
Yeah.
Let's see some.
It's about us more than it's about them. Because, you're right. Because they were doing whatever they wanted.
Yeah. It's like four or five straight runs and three first downs.
Yeah.
They were doing whatever.
So I understand that part of it. It's you don't need to do that.
Yeah. Like now?
Because you're crushing them.
Yeah.
But we've been asking for 5 years for that.
I know.
And the point of the game is 14-3.
And it's wide open.
Yeah.
If you're going to trust one guy on this offense to make the block, it's Cokeheve.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets his head around late. Taylor Britt gets past him. Kai Thomas can't get the chip. I mean, Brevin Spanford is wide open by 50 yards.
Right. And just emotionally, if that hits,
it's
21-3. Place is going crazy. The 8-year-old Nebraska fan that trash talked me at Buffalo Wild Wings at 8:30 is going back to Buffalo Wild Wings with his dad, head in hand. So that's my whole thing. Was it the right call? Probably not.
Hindsight's always 20/20. Yeah.
However, we've been asking for it forever.
Yeah, I know. That's the point I came to it too.
And that's so I'm fine with it. And like you say, it could have turned the game because Nebraska went right down and scored, but they survived it. And there was enough time in the game to make up for whatever it was.
Yeah, and you brought up Kai Thomas, and we think about the blitz pickup he picked up
on the Michael Brown Stevens one.
That was a heck of a play by a freshman running back.
100%.
Cam Taylor Britt, an all Big Ten corner, very physical, among the most physical corners in the league, and it's the freshman out there with the key blitz pickup, and then Tanner just drops it in a bucket.
After just kind of shuffling his feet a couple of times to the left, it was beautiful.
But that execution, it's little things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if that running back doesn't pick up that blitz, that play, maybe Tanner gets sacked, maybe he fumbles, maybe they have to, it's executing, and you see what that offense can be and how it can function when guys to sound like Mace, do your job, you know? And that's a heck of a play by Kai Thomas that probably didn't get a lot of recognition, but
it on Parent and Spare, that's what we noticed.
That's
the
right.
Details.
We break it down.
We're great football minds.
That's right.
Yeah.
I still can't believe Chris Ottman Bell came down with that one in the end zone. That was fantastic throw from Tanner. And Ottman Bell somehow one-upped it with that catch and somehow got the wherewithal to get a foot down.
It's crazy.
Chris Ottman Bell means so much to that passing offense.
11 catches?
It's incredible.
Yeah. That offense is so different when he's there because, I mean, he's just a big-time player.
Well, I just think Sanford trusts that if Tanner's just going to throw the 50-50 ball, Ottman Bell's just going to come down with it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman were different receivers in how they won. It feels like Ottman Bell's the best contested catch winner in my 11 years of watching Gopher football in terms of covering.
Well, he's right up there with those guys in that because they did that too. And that was what Tanner would always joke about that. I'd say, so like, he's probably said it, the 50-50 ball. He's like, it's not 50-50.
Yeah,
it's
not with Chris. 80-20.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to throw it up there, and they're probably going to come down with it.
Or Chris has the veteran wherewithal to, if he knows he can't get it, he's going to run towards the ball, draw the PI like we saw Brown Stevens, where Minnesota's trying to throw it out of the end zone. Brown Stevens doesn't kind of correct his route there to really draw the PI to get you out. And he'll learn that as time goes on. But it just felt like with Sanford, he finally was like, you know what? Screw it.
Mm-hmm.
We got 6 games left. People hate me anyway. I have a fourth-year quarterback. I now no longer have Trey Potts.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of running backs. I don't know what I'm going to see with. And I do believe, like, through the first half, they were pretty even in snap count. But then Bryce Williams just got the hot hand, per se. So I could see next week maybe it's Bucky, maybe it's Kai. But you're happy for Bryce, too. You know?
Don't you think that's going to have to be how it goes forward, like, 3 guys kind of splitting it equally.
I mean,
one guy gets hot.
17, 7, and 7 were the
carries. And that's where, again,
which feels about right.
In that last 20 minutes of the game, it was essentially more or less the Bryce Williams show, other than a couple of Kai Thomas carries.
Yeah.
But I think that's the way it's going to be. And I'm, you know, this offensive line without Curtis Dunlap, you know, we were like, how are they going to? I think, I mean, say what you will, I'll give you the hot take. I think Axel Rushmeier is a much better fit for this offense.
He played pretty well.
He had some nice blocks.
I mean, on that Bryce Williams touchdown, I mean, he baptized that linebacker at the second level to allow Bryce to, and if you're not going to catch one Gopher running back in the open field, it's going to be Bryce Williams.
And you could tell that Bryce Williams, like, it's almost like Tanner, like the more carries he gets.
He got into a rhythm.
Yeah, because like Kai Thomas, there was one run where he could have gone either way, I think, and gotten the first down.
Indecision.
And he didn't know which way to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's just experience, and that's why I think you go, okay, let's give it to the guy who's had some carries, mm-hmm. and like, let's get him going a little bit. Like, which it was a nice little sleight of hand by PJ all week, like barely mentioning Bryce Williams.
Yeah, all he did all week was talk about the freshman backs.
And I feel stupid about that.
And then the button on the table.
The button on the table.
Yeah.
Didn't tell us about the button.
Oh.
I got a little misty thinking about young Bryce Williams playing Pop Warner football. Yeah.
The mom gives the button. That's a great story.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. But that's a guy, as you said, he goes, at the end of the day, it's not that I trusted him more, but he's done it. And it makes sense to give. He should get the first opportunity.
And you know, he was the hot hand, so you stick with him. But I don't see one of these guys being a 22-carry-a-game guy every game.
Probably not.
Maybe they'll prove me wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, that'd be great if they do. But I think it's going to be a pretty balanced mix between the three.
Well, you have to now, especially now that you're down to 3 backs. Now that Cam Wiley.
Yeah.
What was your favorite?
But he wasn't
Cam
playing.
Wiley
he wasn't playing anyways.
No.
And he played like 2 snaps, and that was when. By the way, can we all acknowledge Minnesota went 5 wide?
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw a PJ Fleck team go 5 wide?
Northern Illinois when he was one of the receivers.
I don't remember it.
No.
Oh my goodness.
I don't remember it. But yeah, we can talk Cam Wiley if you want real quickly. He's going into the portal. That to me is. I think we've talked about this before, Bernsey. This is an imperfect, imperfect comparison. But I think part of Scott Frost and Nebraska's problem is something that they couldn't control. Year 2, when everybody picked Nebraska to win the West, you and I were there, was the dumbest thing the media has ever done.
Oh,
ever.
My goodness.
I'm looking at it and I go, how? Because he did that at Central Florida? Like, have you guys not been watching this team? Or is it just because 15 people from Nebraska vote in this Cleveland poll?
Yeah.
Like, I don't do they have more electoral votes in this thing? Like, that makes no sense. But I think that got everybody ahead of what's – now, should they be better in year 4 of Scott Frost? Probably. But like you said, Chip, they are getting better.
I think they're a good team.
I agree.
Yeah.
They find these ways to – like, Adrian Martinez – taking that, I mean, I turned to Daniel House in the press box in the fourth quarter. I was like, Martinez has fumbled in three straight games. He's had these boneheaded turnovers in the fourth quarter that's killed him. I go, he's going to do something on this drive. And then he tries to do what he's done all year, scramble out of pressure. It says he doesn't let go. Intentional grounding in the end zone.
Yeah, and he was going down. He was getting a safety either way. The mistake was getting that
he waited
crisscrossed.
Too long.
Yeah, he didn't get the hell out of there.
That's where, you know, you hate to see it where it says he bull rushes the Lakeville North kid into him.
Oh, the Burnsy T.
Especially after dad. Yeah, that's a whole different story.
The Burnsy T. Okay.
But even, again, just with this offense, can we talk also about RPO to the tight end in Brevin Span 4?
Yeah.
Can you? I would love to have you just single in on PJ on that first touchdown. He decides to go for it on 4th and 1.
Yeah.
Can you imagine his anxiety level, the risk-averse man that he is, when he hears the play in the headset? Yeah, we're going to go play action to Brevin out of the Cole Kramer package.
Yeah. Right.
And he actually let it go. And, you know, it's a great throw, but it's a touchdown.
And eventually you have to show that.
And he was wide open for a reason.
Yeah, and it's set it up, and then do it. And so now you have to, if they get in that situation again, teams going forward have to think that's an option.
Yes, and that's the time to do it.
Exactly.
Early in the, because we wanted that against Purdue. Under no circumstances in the driving monsoon is PJ going to let a guy who's never thrown a college pass throw a 3rd and 3. It's just not going to happen. Like, right. You can say all you want about it. It's not going to happen. That's the time to do it, because if you don't get it, okay. You went for it. You blew it.
Still a long game.
Long game. They've got bad field position. Like, that to me, there wasn't much risk. The reward was much bigger than the potential risk. But that's when you do it, where you can feel a little bit better. And the pressure isn't completely there. And even then, it was close. Brevin Span Ford made a nice catch. But that's on there now. And you got to believe, again, like we've said for 6 weeks, there's a lot more that is in there that they haven't shown that they've got there. And hopefully they can dial it up at some point.
Well, it's funny also, like, now that we're halfway through the season, I think we have enough data. And it's where, again, I like to use Pro Football Focus. Of the Big Ten West quarterbacks, Tanner's got the highest ADOT. For those of you who don't know what ADOT is, averaged up the target. So there's no quarterback in the West that is throwing the ball further downfield per throw right now than Tanner Morgan, and I think they have to keep doing that.
Because you have wide receivers that can make plays down the field. Throw the ball down the field.
You got Ottman Bell.
Brown Stevens can run.
My goodness. I mean, that guy can create separation if you give him enough time to be running there.
I think they can get Dalen Wright. I mean, there's, you know,
he has the drop and then they bench him for
a while. Well, they need to start. I mean, can they just, like, is there a drill where you can practice getting crushed over the middle and coming down with it? Because that's what they need to practice, because you could tell he's just not.
But he has a big play coming at some point.
I mean, you're right.
We saw it early on at Ohio State.
Maybe don't run him in over the middle anymore. At some point, you go, man, maybe just run him down the seam.
Yeah.
Let him run down the side. Because he doesn't want to do it. Like, I know we need him to do it.
Yeah.
But maybe let's not. It's not going to work.
I just want to see the next six games, especially this weekend again against Maryland, continue to be aggressive. Just like you were. You can't just go into the shell now that you don't have Potts and Ibrahim. Because, again, I don't think any of those running backs really had showed on Saturday that, you know, they're true game changers yet. Again, we'll see the remaining 6-7 games here.
Keep getting them out there, though.
But if you're going to win 4, 5, 6 games here going forward, it's going to be because your offense and your fourth-year quarterback and an aggressive mindset from your offensive coordinator, that's the way you're going to be able to do it.
And don't you think having a healthy Ottman Bell gives them the confidence to do that?
No question.
If Minnesota's going to have a shot in the West, it's Chris Ottman Bell. Yes,
right.
You know, we talked at length about the defense, and they're going to raise the floor and give you an opportunity each week, but it's the passing offense and Tanner, and more specifically Chris Ottman Bell. I mean, Chris Ottman Bell is going to have a fantastic end of the season here if Minnesota's going to continue with this.
All right. Anything else on the Gophers? That was 43 minutes of Gopher discussion.
Wow.
And we still haven't even gotten to one of your favorite teams yet in David Bell. Eviscerating.
It's on the list.
Okay.
It's on the list. But that's why, as we said at the beginning, it's now 3:45 in the morning as we continue on the marathon edition of Pear and a Spare. Ryan Burns, a couple Saturdays ago.
Yeah.
You asked the better half, as you call it, for her hand in marriage.
I did.
It was a wonderful day for you, right?
She told me, here's the story. So will you marry me? And she goes, I hate you. And yes.
Wow.
Wow.
I hate you for her means I love
welcome
you.
Welcome to marriage.
Yeah. She was very flustered, but then I eventually did get the yes. Yeah.
A nice day for you?
It was. And then Tanner he saw me and he was like, well, I'm going to change my best.
Yeah.
And then he proposed to his significant other over the bye week as well.
He saw how much it meant to you.
Yeah.
But I bring all of that up because in the fall of 2021, you will remember that day after you remember last Saturday. in terms of the best days of the fall for you?
That game should have been 34-7-2, which is incredible.
Well, I say Nebraska, you know, Minnesota,
yep,
and their culture.
Culture.
Beating Nebraska and their skill.
Yeah.
And you finally living in a world where Iowa doesn't get 9 turnovers,
yep,
and short fields. Even though, as you mentioned, they did. There was a, where I thought it was going to be a turning point where a wide receiver for Purdue reaches for the end zone to go up another touchdown. Not only doesn't get the touchdown, fumbles it in the end zone.
Touchback.
I hate that rule, touchback, yeah, and you're thinking, oh, there it is. There's
the horseshoe.
And everybody's thinking that. Even Kirk, yeah, Ferentz is probably like, Jesus,
yeah,
we're lucky. Like, unbelievable. But maybe the best Saturday of your fall, though, all things considered, correct?
Yeah. You know, Jeff Brohm just knows the cheat code how to beat Phil Parker's defense. And more specifically, David Bell. I mean, David Bell in his career against Iowa is insane.
240 yards this last game?
Oh, my goodness.
And I'd love to watch that guy play.
Jeff Brohm.
Stud.
Yeah.
I mean, just he knows how to get David Bell in single coverage against these Iowa cornerbacks, and Phil Parker's stubborn. The Iowa defensive coordinator was like, okay.
That's the key.
You know, we'll see if they win them. Well, Aiden O'Connell could find David Bell wide open all day. They ran the ball just enough. And again, that game should have been 34-7 because if he doesn't throw the ball at the pylon and they don't miss a chippy field goal, we finally found out what it's like when Iowa doesn't have all of these turnovers.
That's it. And you guys sort of called it last week, you know?
Like I say,
Brohm knows how to beat Ferentz.
Well, here's what – it's not that he knows how. It's that what he does is how you beat them.
Yeah. And they don't run, and you can throw the ball on them.
And I have an Iowa fan friend who has texted me every morning this week that David Bell just caught another pass.
Yeah.
Like every morning, like 6:47, I get a text from Steve. David Bell just caught another one, touchdown Purdue.
But it is true. And Iowa clearly was not the second best team in college football because you cannot have an offense that pedestrian or that bad, however you want to phrase it. If you don't turn the ball over against them,
what is their
plan B?
Right, right.
Because that offense is not good.
And with Purdue, Jeff Brohm has 16 Big Ten victories. 25% of them are against Kirk Ferentz.
Okay? That's a stat.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's because it's a bad matchup for Iowa because when we talked about this last week, the reason I felt confident, I didn't think Purdue was going to go in there and boat race them.
No.
But I thought the spread was like 14. I thought that was ridiculous because Sean Clifford, as we said, this loss was a week late. I'll go to my grave saying Sean Clifford doesn't get hurt. Yes. Iowa does not win that game.
Correct.
They barely won with a quarterback that I think I could have gone. I would have eliminated the false starts. Okay? I would have gone to a silent count and we wouldn't have had that many false starts. But Iowa had to literally worry about nothing on defense for the last 2.5 quarters of that game. And they still needed a big play at the end to win that game.
Yeah.
So if Iowa fans are annoyed, it's like, that's just the football gods saying, okay, we gave you one last week. Like, that was borrowed time. Sean Clifford was dicing them up, and that's the strategy against Iowa is you can't run on them. And that's what's been maddening about how the Gophers have tried to do it, going all the way back to Kill. The one year they boat raced Iowa, what happened? Max Williams went nuts.
Crazy, yeah.
They threw the ball all over the place. And that's how you beat them, and that's what – and it's not like Jeff Brohm has discovered electricity. That's what Purdue does, and he doesn't care about making mistakes.
Well, but you can't make – you can't throw 3 picks.
Yeah.
You have to throw it, but you have to be, and I'm not saying conservative, but
strategic about it.
Yes.
Smart about it.
Yes. And it just goes to show you, is like, if they don't create turnovers, I don't know if their offense can overcome
right
that.
Now.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Not.
Right. Unless the punter's amazing.
Which he wasn't on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which played a part of it.
Because I was really good at getting it to like the 40 and then punting it. And then downing it at the 5.
Yeah, and
then their defense gets stopped, and then Charlie Jones, who's their punt returner, gives them great field position, and Spencer Petras has to leave.
That's their formula.
It's a 8-yard scoring drive.
Yeah, they're definitely a field position team, without a doubt, because their offense isn't good enough to go 80 yards.
In college football, it's more dependent upon having good field position than Iowa.
But the thing about Iowa, and I would say even Northwestern to this degree, and I might have talked to you guys about this before. I'm sure you and I have talked about this, Bernsey. It drives me crazy when coaches, they get in their own head about, and we should check, I should actually check the Purdue record against Northwestern too, because they get in their own head about what this team might do to us.
Yeah.
And then they get panicked, and then they try to play perfect, and then guess what happens? You screw it up anyway.
Yeah.
The 1 year, and 2 years ago in 2019, granted the Gophers were really good, Northwestern was terrible, but that was like the 1 year where they're like, well, we're way better than you. We have better players than you. We're just going to throw the ball all over the place. And And that's the same thing with Iowa, is people, they get spun up because they, which the reputation is earned. They do make you pay for mistakes. But
absolutely.
But if you live in that area all the time, it's like, it just becomes, to me, self-fulfilling.
And how much do you think coaches obsess and think about the takeaways that Iowa have?
A ton.
And it affects the way they play.
Well, think, again, I don't know, did you listen to Fleck after? I mean, he talked about, I think it was either Monday or after Saturday, he talked about they needed, it was yesterday, talked about how, you know, we need to get more turnovers, we didn't turn, you know, Nebraska over, and he's like, there are some teams in our league that's all they do is get turnovers.
Yeah.
Who do you think he's talking about?
Right.
He's talking about Iowa.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely they get in their own head, but it's just, I think the one perplexing part about that game, Iowa's offensive line, or Brian Ferentz was so stubborn that, you remember George Karlaftis?
Yeah.
One of the best, I think he's the best player in the Big Ten nobody talks about.
You got to this point.
Is that against Minnesota, they just double-teamed him the whole time.
Yeah.
Mike Sanford said, we're not going to let George Karlaftis beat us.
There was at least one play, they had three guys on him.
Yeah.
And Iowa was like, you know what, we're Iowa. And we're just going to go one-on-one.
We're
and
better,
I've never seen this before. George Karlaftis, I think, had 11 or 12 pressures.
Yeah, he was a monster.
He was baptizing the tackles. And they were just so stubborn that Karlaftis was just constantly getting pressure, and that didn't help Petras. And again, four picks for Petras on the day. It's the worst game of the season. But why did they not – I mean, George Karlaftis is going to be a first-round player to me. Why did you not give some help out to your tackles there? That was mind-boggling.
Yeah, and it's – you talk about a guy who was a one-man wrecking crew, just disrupted the entire offense.
Yes.
And to not realize that during a game and said, you know what?
They just didn't adjust.
This is we can't handle him. We have to give some help over there. To not do that, I don't know if it's just arrogance or just, you know what, we'll keep doing what we do. Or
well, that's where I, again, going back to the Gophers, I give credit to the coaches because they, with David Bell, they said, well, he's going to get his catches, but we can't let him go crazy. With Karlaftis, the best part about watching the TV copy, it drove Grimm crazy because we were watching on the plane home, and he's like, this is why TV sucks. He goes, because you got a producer in there going, we got to get Karlaftis in here, so let's show some Karlaftis stuff. It's like, okay, that's him getting triple teamed and not affecting the quarterback. That's him, again, getting pushed off to the side by two guys, not affecting the quarterback. Like they just said, you're not ruining the game. And so I give credit to the Gopher coaches there that they identified Bell, Karlaftis, and said, do your thing. We can't let you ruin this, just like they did with Adrian. But Iowa never, for whatever reason. And Iowa's got great coaches. That's what I don't get.
You have two really good players from Purdue. You have David Bell, who eviscerates them.
Two of the best in the Big Ten.
And George Karlaftis, who eviscerates them. And it's just, just like Justin said, I think Iowa's got a very good coaching staff. They seem to game plan well for the most part. They seem to adjust. And in this game against Purdue, they were just like, you know what? We're not going to make any adjustments. And I think that played a huge part in their downfall. By the way, Minnesota's now got as many ranked wins as Iowa does.
Well, that's where I wanted to go, because Purdue is now ranked. They are 25th in the country.
That's something.
They have the same record as the Gophers, 4-2 and 2-1. So the question now, boys, what's going on in the West Division?
Especially after that Wisconsin-Army two-hour game.
Which I also called, by the way. I told you that was going to be a close game. That's what Army does.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been an hour and a half, but these commercial breaks that they were taking were, oh my goodness. Yes, they had to, and I get it, but jiminy crickets.
I give Wisconsin credit for, you know, obviously their offense is something we got to talk about too, but like Army, I don't know why anybody schedules Army.
Because you can't.
There's no win. Unless you want to go visit Mikey Stadium in West Point and see one of the great, you know, places in our country.
Yeah.
Get a home and home with Army, but man, it's a tough out.
Well, then we said even when Iowa was pulling away, the West should be wide open.
And now we're halfway
because
through.
Because there's not.
I think it still is.
There are not, we've said it from day one. There are not offenses that scare you on that side.
Well, and the Gophers, if we're keeping it to Minnesota, has already handled Purdue.
Yeah.
Because I bring it all up to say they're ranked 25th in the country right now. Is Purdue a legitimate West contender?
I want to see Brom do it two
What's
weeks
their schedule,
in a row.
Garzy?
They got,
it's funny you ask.
They got Wisconsin this weekend.
Yes.
And it just seems like Brom has a big win
at
like
home.
This.
Is Wisconsin favored in that game?
Yes.
Yes.
It's like a 38 over under, and I think it's like Wisconsin by 3.
That's what you said the other day.
Yeah.
I guess that surprises me.
Well, I want to see Brom do it in back to back weeks, because that's something he has done. He has these big wins.
Yeah.
Like Ohio State in 2018, these wins against Iowa, and then the next week they have this, we're going to fall back into mediocrity. Brom's not going to have it together. You know, Aiden O'Connell's not going to look like this tremendous quarterback.
But I think that Purdue defense is something, man.
It's better.
They're better.
It's good enough.
And the offense is
It's good enough to complement finally an offense that when Aiden O'Connell's on, like he was, you know, completed 75% of his passes against
Iowa. King Daru's a nice little back, too, by the way. Yeah. I mean, he gives them enough.
The thing is, the Gophers made him kick field goals. Correct. They scored touchdowns against Iowa. And it's just, you got to be able to figure out a way, because you're going to give up big plays against them and a lot of yards. Can you keep them out of the end zone? And make that critical sack that forces them to 3rd and 15, which is what the Gophers did.
Right. Well, here's their
schedule. Are they legit? Yeah, what's their schedule?
Wisconsin, as Burns, you mentioned.
You said at home, right?
At home. At Nebraska. Michigan State at home. At Ohio State.
That's a lot of ranked teams.
Northwestern and Indiana.
I almost say no. I think there's at least two losses in there.
Okay.
They have, what are they, one Big Ten loss right now?
Yes, to the Golden Gophers.
Yep.
Culture over skill.
I think there's at least two losses
Ohio
in there.
I think Ohio State... is, again, you look at Minnesota's upcoming schedule, you get Maryland and Indiana. They don't look like two particularly great teams, and that's where Purdue getting Ohio State there.
I mean, would you – like them going into Lincoln, I wouldn't say that's a win.
That's the interesting part is where is Nebraska in here? Because they still have to play everybody too, and I think they can beat some of those
teams. If they continue to play hard, I'll tell you right now, I'll say this. I think they beat Iowa or Wisconsin still.
They feel like they have a win that's an upset coming.
Yeah,
because
if they continue to play hard and they don't give up on this thing.
Well, and that's the thing you always wonder about a team. When you have so many close losses and you feel like you're playing well, but I mean, I don't think they played well last week, but before that, they felt like they were right there, and they just eventually, it almost feels like that sucks the spirit out of you, the life out of you.
That's where you just don't
know. And maybe they hang in there and they don't, you know.
It's going to be great, though. I mean, because every game is now so impactful.
Yeah.
You know, I remember this from 2019 when Illinois beat Wisconsin. It's like that changes everything. I mean, this thing will probably go down to the last day, which is all any of us could hope for.
Yeah.
And it's going to come down to, can Minnesota beat Wisconsin at home? And can, I think the last week of the season, it's Nebraska at home against Iowa.
That's correct.
Which, again, if Nebraska's playing hard, that's a
good.
It could happen.
And we, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday and talking to somebody. I don't think we can, with the Gophers, because we see them lose.
You've seen
to Bowling Green,
Bowling
so
Green.
We can't say, win, you know.
No, right.
You can't, but I still feel this comes down to what we said. You got to beat one of the two.
Flex got to split.
You've got to split.
He's got to at least split. The 1-7 against Wisconsin and Iowa.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, even looking at this weekend, I mean, Maryland is just, they're such a different team than they were 4 weeks ago. They're without Dante Dimas, who's their best receiver, who just, I mean, both of his knees are just eviscerated from that, and he's out for the year. Their number two, Jayshon Jones, he's probably out. We'll see what Loxley said. I mean, you look back at last year's game, the three players that killed Minnesota, Jake Funk, who ran for 200-something yards now with the Chargers.
Oh, Jake Funk. Yeah. God, forgot about him.
Now.
In Dante Dimas and Jayshon Jones went for over 100 yards. None of those players are going to be there. And this is a beat-up Maryland team. Now, they're coming off a bye, but there's a reason Minnesota's favored this weekend. And I think the game plan, if you're Joe Rossi, to try and contain Taulia is do the same thing that you
100%.
Did. 100%. That Keep you did the Martinez.
Keep
make him
there.
Make the throw, because you've seen him the last 2 weeks. He's got 7 picks.
I go back to, if you're going to be legitimate contender, this is a game you win. I
you
said the same
win.
Thing at Purdue. Go win the game. You know.
Well, then it's the next 3 weeks, because I don't think Northwestern's a particularly good team. I don't think Illinois is a particularly good team.
God play got, perfect to beat Northwestern.
We should never.
The next three at home.
Tracy just, no.
Well, the other thing, like, with this Maryland game this weekend is the last two games against Maryland, Minnesota ran the ball in 19 for over 300 yards.
Yeah.
Last year, Mo had 40 carries, and they ran for 250 yards. I don't think that's the rest. I mean, they're going to try.
Yeah.
But this is, with the way that this Minnesota offense is currently constructed, I don't know that I see a 200-yard rushing game in the cards, but, I mean, this is a very beat-up team for Maryland right now coming into this, even with the bye week.
And I like the confidence that this defense, the Gophers defense, is playing with. It just feels like you could see it almost building by week, that they're, the more success they have in the game plan and their roles, that it just feels different. You know, we'll see if they continue, but it just feels different, and the eye test looks different.
Well, maybe the most interesting game outside of this, because I don't think the Big Ten slate overall this weekend is particularly great. There's 4 teams on bye again, but it's that Wisconsin-Purdue game, especially with Purdue getting it at home. I mean, with Iowa and Wisconsin, the game plan, get them in a negative game script, and let's see if Spencer Petras or Graham Mertz, which Graham Mertz, by the way, didn't look particularly great against Army.
Right.
I mean, if Purdue gets up 10-0 in the middle of the second quarter against Wisconsin in West Lafayette this weekend,
they're just not built to come back. I mean, same way with Iowa.
Right.
If they get down, they don't have that kind of offense. But I do want to see Jim Leonard's defense against.
See what he does.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel for Jim Leonard, man. I mean, he just has getting no help offensively.
He's probably thinking that Packers job looks pretty good right now.
Well, think about it.
Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback.
Back weeks, you got to go from the triple option of Army to now the aerial assault of Jeff Brohm. Is there any two different ways?
Probably not.
Not much.
I mean, he's got a tough task ahead of him. But the West, now that we've seen what Iowa is, if and when they don't force 9 turnovers in a game, I mean, it's – especially in 2 weeks. I mean, you get the Iowa-Wisconsin game then.
Yeah.
What's the over-under in that game? 35?
Yeah, probably.
And
it's in Madison.
So that's
– Yep.
I mean, if you're looking at it from the Minnesota perspective, how you get there, I mean, how you get to – you know, if you want to be a glass half full guy, maroon and gold colored shade of glasses, you're going to need Madison to beat Iowa City there in Madison to put Iowa at 2. And then if and when you get to that Iowa game, and hopefully you've taken care of business ahead of time, and you can get it done for the first time against Ferentz, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, I love it. I think there's three legitimate teams that can win the West, though.
It's funny how things change
in two weeks.
Yeah,
the perception of, because it felt like I was going to run away with this thing,
right?
And everybody else is playing for second. Now it's like,
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I thought that the Purdue game was like the one that they might hiccup on, but now I'm like, well, there's maybe some more. I mean, with what Nebraska's doing, and obviously Wisconsin, like, I mean, the West champ might have 3 losses. Who knows? I mean,
absolutely,
they could all beat each other.
Yeah,
and that's where it's going to come down, I think, to that last week of the season.
Yeah, because after what I saw from Iowa, I don't know they run the table.
Probably not.
I don't think their offense is good enough.
Right.
Well, coming out of the bye, Brian Ferentz has got to get that thing figured out offensively, because I just don't know that outside of Tyler Goodson, who, oh, by the way, couldn't get going against Purdue.
Right.
Like, they got to figure some things out offensively if they are going to be the West champs.
All right, we've got about 18 minutes to get through about 3 more topics.
Oh, boy. Oh, let's knock it out of the way.
No, we're not going to do that one yet. On January 13th, 2020, Louisiana State University beat number 3 Clemson 42-25 to cap off one of the great seasons in college football history to win the national championship. How many months later is this? Ed Orgeron,
22.
Native son, the native Louisianan, coming home. Winning the title, go Tigers.
The Casey Cookie Monster that he is.
Everything. 18 months later, I don't know. I'm not
22
good at math.
Months later.
22, that's all?
That's.
He's out on the street with a lot of money. And even said, I think I'm going to get a cheeseburger. That's what he said. Like, okay. Louisiana State University, less than 2 years after winning the national championship, has fired their coach. Chip, you're the SEC guy out of the 3 of us.
Well,
how does this happen? What goes on here?
So, you know, that year clearly was
the aberration,
the outlier aberration. Everything, you know, is generational quarterback, a great
defense.
Offensive coordinator who has
Joe Brady,
who
Jefferson
didn't exactly
and Jamar Chase and Terrence Marshall. Yeah.
I read from The Athletic a deep dive.
That story's insane, by the way.
It sounds like there's
I was reading when you got here.
I haven't read it.
You got to read it. It's obviously there were a lot of things happening down there that were behind the scenes. Maybe we're known in that community about. It sounds like Coach O won the national title and got the divorce. And
6 weeks after the national title, he's divorced and living the dream.
And living the dream
of a rich single celebrity.
His social
life
was
interesting.
It people felt like it became more of a focus than the football program and everything. You have the tunnel vision for building the program. And it just felt like. Felt like reading that, the school officials were probably like, okay, where's this headed?
I'll read from a little bit of this story in The Athletic, which is amazing. To people and sources inside the program, there was no moral issue with Orgeron enjoying his life, but it was noticeable that football wasn't an entire focus like it had been in years past. It became a distraction. There was an infamous photo of him in bed with a woman, among other photos that were made public. Multiple sources said he brought women around the LSU football operations building. It all took place as his decision-making and coaching performance declined. It was just a distraction, one LSU player said. In 2019, there was no, what's Coach O doing post-game or Sunday during the day? Is he laying by the pool with a lady? He was planning events other
Holy
than football.
Cow.
Another issue that may have been a problem
So he wins the title.
The pumping the gas one?
Pumping the gas.
Oh, God.
Pumping the gas, and I can't find it here. This story is lengthy. But
he was pumping gas. A woman came by in the workout, and he was hitting on her. Come to find out, she was the pregnant wife of a high-ranking LSU
official.
LSU official.
Because she said, I'm pregnant, I'm married, and he said, why does that matter? And that made it back up the totem pole.
And she was Border Regents wife or some high-ranking.
Which I'll say, Teague vibes right now.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But very much so. It's like.
Don't you think, reading that, my guess is the higher-up said, this is going down a bad path that's going to end in a bad way.
And they've already had issues with sexual assault stuff, not reporting. Oh, and by the way, most important, they're losing football games, which is, let's be honest.
Well, you talk about culture.
But the FBI.
Yeah, we talk about culture. They probably realize this is not what we want. And so
he gets to $17 million. And aren't they negotiating this, by the way, before he beats Florida this weekend?
It sounds like it's been going on for
a while.
This didn't just happen one day.
Well, if you're Coach Owen this, I mean, he gets $17 million to then walk away at the end of the season, which the SEC is just, I mean, like
crazy.
You said, you win a national championship, and less than 2 years later, you're getting negotiated to get bought out. And
well, that league is so cutthroat with recruiting, with everything that, and it happened to my school, that you win a national title, you cannot, and Nick Saban does not pause. He doesn't, he doesn't exhale.
That's why he's one of the greatest of all time.
You can't exhale.
Right.
If you do, you're done.
Well, that was the famous Urban Meyer story, is he wins a national title, he goes into some closet in the stadium and starts calling recruits.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else is, you know, having a party and doing whatever, and this guy's calling recruits and saying, you want to be a part of this.
It's insanity. Can't do it. You can't do it.
Yeah, you can enjoy it, but you got to capitalize on that momentum, and that's where, are you ready for Mel Tucker to go down there?
That's an interesting one, because he's a former assistant there, spent a lot of time in the SEC, and Michigan State's lost their coach to LSU before. I mean, that's where Nick Saban went, right? That was his jump.
Isn't the whole Jimbo Fisher thing, too?
Yeah, and I saw he came out
yesterday. Well, he said the same. Well, it's funny because I saw someone take a screenshot, and he said the same thing at Florida State before he'd said.
Yeah, you can't. What's he going to say? Yeah, I'm interested.
Maybe. Yeah, so it's a hell of a job.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting about him? He's making $1 billion at Texas A&M.
Why would you want to leave that?
Well, do you know how much it costs him to leave Texas A&M?
No.
$0.
What?
He has no buyout.
What an agent.
Jimbo Fisher has no buyout. He goes over.
Who did that contract?
Well, Texas A&M the first time, because they wanted him, right? They wanted him $7.5 million.
Well, he just had the extension.
And that AD did not put the buyout clause in there.
Wow.
Holy
it cost
cow.
Him $0 to leave. You know, Dabo Sweeney's buyout is $3 million at Clemson. So, like, if there's a school like LSU that want, like, you know, we think about, like, man, PJ Flex, it's 4.5. That's not doable, or, you know, whatever, 3. And James
Mel
Franklin
Tucker's is like 6. And
Well,
did you see someone over the weekend said in Southern California sources thinks James Franklin's still the favorite for the USC gig? Which I could see that.
I could too. I could. James Franklin should be the favorite, or should be, if you're one of those power schools and you're not calling James Franklin.
How much of a step up is that, Penn State to USC? Or USC to.
I don't know.
I think it's a step up because there's no Ohio State. That my whole thing.
You got to go through Oregon, and that's it.
You got to beat Oregon, and that's it. And you've got almost, if you're doing it right, exclusive access to everything that's going on there.
And the recruiting base, obviously,
well, especially that's the quarterback spot. I mean, how many West Coast quarterbacks are just tearing it up for these
recruiting?
Top
you're
10
in California.
Teams.
You got all this talent. Right. I understand. And it's USC. They're one of the five programs that are on a different plane than everybody.
And Penn State's probably 6 or 7. I mean, it's not a huge jump, but when you've been in the place for a while, when you're sick of just beating your head against the Ohio State wall.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, you've recruited as well as you've recruited, and you don't have a backup quarterback that can do anything. Like, I wonder
how this LSU impacts the USC.
I think his price is going to go up.
Because he's won in the SEC at Vanderbilt.
Which, by the way, how impressive does that look now that Vanderbilt's back to being a doormat again?
Yeah, James Franklin's a good coach, man.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a good coach. He might be a pain in the ass. He might be hard-charging. Well, get in line, man.
Especially there was many years ago, wasn't the Vanderbilt president said he thought all their sports should be intramurals.
Yeah.
So it's like,
and he won games there.
Yeah.
Talking about
administration support there.
Yeah. He won games there.
He should do intramurals. He might, you know, there might be a bidding war for some coach out there.
I think it'll be Franklin if it is one. Well, maybe it's Mel Tucker. Because who else makes sense there at LSU? I mean, you could say Dave Aranda.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just the D coordinator there. But now he's at Baylor doing some good things. Mel Tucker. I mean, if you want to go the in-state option, Billy Napier, who is – turned down, I think, Baylor in recent years.
I think Dave Aranda would make sense because that defense he had when he was there.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is in reading national people on this that know the LSU footprint better than us and know the AD there, I can't remember his name, Woodward maybe. I can't remember exactly what it was. Because the old A&M AD was at LSU and vice versa. Like, it's very incestuous. Like, everybody's kind of bounced around.
I got a random story,
big,
by the way.
He's big fish. He's big game hunting.
Is he?
He said he wants a big – that's why they think, call Jimbo, see. I mean, maybe he's like, I'd rather go back to LSU because, I mean – I don't know which is a better job. I mean, LSU, the last three coaches won national titles. Not many programs can say that.
A&M's a big program. It's a lot of money they spend, obviously.
Clearly.
So.
And there's players there, and there's all of that. But, you know, that's why they're going to sniff around the big boys before they go that route.
You remember when Aranda was at Wisconsin, made that thing so good?
Yeah.
So the moment he took the LSU job, the Minnesota staff at the time was Clays, Sauvell.
Yeah.
They called him and was like, hey, we love the way you do it. Can you come over here?
I remember that.
In for a day, incognito. They tried to hide it as best they could.
Which is stupid, by the way.
Like,
Of all time, you think someone's at MSP going, I think Dave Aranda just walked by.
So they get him in. It was Clays, Sauvell, and Aranda in a room for like 8 hours, and they went through everything flew him out.
Yeah, to go over the 3-4.
Yes.
Because I remember.
Because they were thinking about doing it.
Well, partly to bring it full circle, because they said it's hard to find enough defensive linemen to do a 4-3.
Yeah.
So let's just, we've got a lot of linebackers here. Yeah. We got Cashman, Kamal, Carter. We've got all these guys. Let's figure out a way to use them. It made sense. It's smart.
Yeah.
And that's where the coaching carousel thing continues to turn and turn and turn. And that's where it'll be interesting. I mean, Mel Tucker, I think, makes sense. And that buyout for him is only $6 million. But does Mel Tucker want to go down there and try to become an SEC cutthroat guy down there? I don't know.
That's the thing. Is like, it's the ego balance of, I can win there, I can win a national championship, but I'm also going up against these guys, and if I don't win enough, I'm going to get fired in 18 months.
But if you're in Michigan State,
you're in the
Michigan.
East. It's the same.
True.
It's the same thing.
And Ohio State and Penn State.
Yep.
It's the same thing.
I mean, D'Antonio got that program fat when Ohio State was in trouble, Penn State was in trouble, Michigan was in trouble. Like, there was no coincidence why that.
But he was a good coach, too.
100%. He maximized on all of that.
Yeah.
But you saw, once Ohio State stabilized, once Penn State stabilized, Michigan, all of a sudden, State's no good anymore.
Yeah.
And they're looking for a coach. I mean, that's no coincidence.
I can't see PJ in this thing because I know people are going to want to say.
Row the boat. R-E-A-U-X. I already tweeted it to you.
Yes.
The boat, baby.
I didn't see that.
Row the boat. Go Tigers. No. Sloganeering goes to Baton Rouge.
Could you see PJ out of Washington State?
That's a good transition. Man, you should be in radio. Unbelievable. I didn't know Mike Greenberg was on the podcast today.
Oh, boy.
Nick Rolovich, a man of principle, is no longer the head coach at Washington State. We'd already had the rundown set, and then late last night, in the middle of last night, whatever, Mike Tice, I think, broke the news.
He did, of all people, Mike Tice.
I love life right now. I just love this whole week. This is real life. Nick Rolovich, for those that don't know, no reason to, was the head coach at Washington State, did not want to get the vaccine. It had been a thing all summer long, didn't go to Pac-12 media days, said, I'm going to follow the state's mandate, which clearly meant at some point he was going to try to get a religious exemption to not get the vaccine. The state has a mandate where you have to, especially if you work for a state institution, that you've got to get vaccinated to work. The deadline was this past Monday, and Nick Rolovich didn't get the vaccine. Didn't get the whatever it's called, amendment, what did I just call it?
Exemption.
And not only is he out, but four assistant coaches are out as well. By the way, the Cougs have won 3 in a row and are starting to play really well.
I feel bad for the players.
Absolutely.
And for the assistant coaches that got it, he basically screwed them over because they're going to lose their job.
Yeah.
Because a new staff's going to come in, and now they might keep these guys. I don't know. But they very well might not. And
I thought I saw yesterday, like, the administration has already come out and said for the rest of the season, they're going to hire 5 outside the program assistant coaches to now come in with these guys that are already vaccinated on the staff. Can you imagine?
Well, how
does that work?
How do you sit there and would be able to look at your players that you recruited and talk about family and all these things, and then, all right, you guys are on, this program's dismantled now because you have 5 coaches gone in the middle of the season. It's just so
avoidable and stupid.
Selfish.
Selfish is the word.
It's
your
just
personal
unbelievably
beliefs
selfish.
Apparently weren't worth $10 million, which is so.
Yeah, forget about your own guys.
You're walking away from $10 million because you won't get an FDA-approved shot.
I don't get it. And the AD came out and said, we need a coach that's going to provide leadership in every aspect, which is a pretty frontal shot, and he's right.
And the other, I mean, I don't know this guy if he has a family, like wife and kids. It's like, dude,
$10 million.
You're not going to be another head coach.
Right. It's going to be a hell of a lawsuit, I'm sure, between Rolovich and the university about this cause that he's being fired for. But
yeah, by the way, he's being fired for a cause.
Yeah, so he's not going to collect any of it in theory. Yeah. And again, there'll be a long lawsuit, I'm sure. But can you imagine? Look, my personal beliefs are what they are, but for eight figures, I think I can get an FDA-approved shot.
Every man has a price.
I mean, the money, yes, but to me, it's what you're doing to that team and those players.
And your coaches, like you said.
And the coaches.
The ones that came
their livelihoods. They have kids that – so I mean
– you win three in a row, and now your kids are like – and the players, I feel for them, man.
Yeah.
You've got momentum going. And the deadline was the deadline, and he stood by his beliefs, and the university called him his bluff. And
What an idiot. I'm sorry, he's just an idiot.
Yeah, I'll never understand it.
No.
They're clearly, I
wrote a column back when the Cousins stuff was going on and just got a backlash.
Oh, yeah.
There are people who are strongly about it, but I just think when you're in that position and you're running a program – and you're standing up as the face of this university in some ways, and you recruited these players and you told their parents you're going to be there for them, take care of them, do all this, and then you bail because you don't want to get a shot.
Hey, I'm all for principles, but it's like,
come on.
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing here? I don't understand. I don't see PJ, by the way, in the Washington State coaching mix, if you were going to ask that. I don't think.
No.
Yeah, I don't think there's boats in Pullman.
Well, I think we know Washington State would be interested in him. It says, PJ Fleck was one of the people with the Department of Health trying to get people vaccinated.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Fleck has come out and said multiple times the man's got the shot in the arm. But $10 million he's going to walk away from because of
And just think about what it does for his coaching career.
Right.
Like, is he going to go try to get another job somewhere else? I mean, yeah, what's your resume? What have you done? Well, I walked out on my team in the middle of the season because I didn't want to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with that interview.
I just can't get over the whole
thing. Well, and just the opportunity of being a Power 5 head coach.
Yes.
I mean, at a young age, I mean, he's not an old guy. So it just, maybe he'll do the speaker circuit from now on. I mean, Fox News will have him on tonight, I'm sure, and he'll be rolling around.
We talked about it with Coach O. I mean, you made it not about the program. You made it about yourself. And even with things going well for them in recent weeks, it became too much of a distraction for Washington State's administration, and they decided we're going to call your bluff too.
Yeah,
that's it. And the AD said, "Well, we can't. He can't coach. We have no choice because we have a mandate that says he is not fit to coach for us or work for us because of these laws and mandates." So it's not like they had any choice, and they strung it along as long as possible. So whatever.
I mean, it's annoying. Yeah,
it's just like whatever. I hope you don't regret it one day because it all seems stupid to me.
It does.
But
whatever.
Speaking of stupid,
we got about 5 minutes, Chip.
Yeah, that was not a good look.
Why don't you just tell us what?
Yeah,
I'm
at my hotel in Charlotte, and great game. We're hanging in there. Lane Kiffin, we're playing well. Big play, fourth down. I thought he was short based on a replay.
I
agreed with it. I just don't understand our fans sometimes. That it goes back to the
Schiano thing.
The Schiano thing where they felt like they could determine who was going to be the head coach, and they
I forgot about that.
They basically shame and humiliate and force the AD not to hire Greg Schiano and hire a guy who was just completely incompetent. And now this, where you're throwing golf balls and mustard and all. It's just a terrible look. And we deserved – I don't know that the punishment was enough. I think it was a $250,000 fine.
Right.
I don't think that's enough. Tennessee have an 11 a.m. game the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think it – because you cannot have that where and don't tell me – I saw this on Facebook and some other places. Well, they missed a lot of calls, and they were faking injuries. So you're going to throw golf balls?
And mustard? Like,
seems like a stretch.
I mean, come on. Have a little more. There are bad calls. You don't throw stuff on the field and risk. They had to take the cheerleaders and the band off the field because they were in danger of being injured. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
And I love the Vols, and I love, that's my passion, but it was just, it's embarrassing.
Feels like, I mean, every fan base has bad apples, but it feels like there's more bad apples in Tennessee's fan base than there are in the average one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it is a small percentage.
Yeah.
So, but it's,
It's higher than normal, I'd say.
But the way we've handled things in the past makes you feel like it's a higher percentage, right?
Well, who would want to go coach Tennessee with all the just crap that's going around? By the way, I loved Kiffin then keeping the golf ball. And then did you see on social media, it's a side-by-side with him and George Costanza?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the seat was angry that day, my friends. Is that a titleist? The best video was the when he caught the water bottle on the way out.
Yeah,
snags it.
Yeah.
If I'm the... the police chief or the sheriff? I'm looking at my guys and going, you guys turtled in the face of adversity. Lane Kiffin's getting stuff thrown at him. The officers are dumping under the table, and Lane Kiffin just Odell Beckhams it. Yeah. One hand puts it in his pocket. That was the greatest catch I saw all weekend. It was unbelievable.
And, you know, he was the perfect – I mean, Lane obviously
the
gets –
perfect coach.
Yeah,
the perfect coach just for that to
Yeah, and – but, whatever punishment we get, is deserved.
Well, you got the $250,000,
and it's just.
Can't do it.
I don't know if they have videos that they can find people that were doing it and get them.
Yeah.
Barred from coming to games because no matter what happened, you can't do that. I mean, it's a safety issue. It's an optics issue. It's just
right.
You cannot have any sporting event delayed 20 minutes because people are throwing stuff at players and coaches. I mean, it's absurd.
And we've seen it. We saw it in the NBA, a guy throwing stuff at Kyrie Irving. Like, things happen. Like, some of it might be because we've been locked in our house for the last 2 years and people don't know how to act.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things. It's like, you got to have some sense. I mean, you just have to.
And I thought there might be I think they serve alcohol there. I thought they might,
suspend it for
suspend
a while.
Alcohol.
I think it's one of the first years they have there.
Yeah.
So what's your conspiracy theory about the French mustard? Because that's not just like a pocket-sized thing.
Club level.
I think they stole it from the concession stand. Yeah. For whatever reason.
Arm from the Lowe's.
I don't think they ran up there and said, let's get this and throw it. I think the guy said, hey, I'm taking this from the concession stand. What you bought some hot.
It's a guy putting mustard on his hot dog, looking at one of the TVs. Getting mad, running down to section 112 and just letting it fly. That's what I think.
See, I like to think he brought it from home because you have the guy. Have you seen?
Because he loves mustard.
Well,
much.
He hates the
he doesn't like the
knockoff
stadium mustard.
Store brand mustard at the stadium.
Yeah. The packets. But, you can't have packets. There's never enough.
That's a lot of mustard, and that's where I'm like, is it the security guy? Because I think we've all seen the GIF. Again, this is a podcast. You can't see my arms. Where it's just the guy outside the stadium just going.
Or was
just
it?
Not barely patting him down, and then he brought it in and threw it.
Or was it a hollowed out mustard container filled with moonshine?
Could have been.
I like that.
So we think it's mustard. I think there might have been alcohol in there.
I wish somebody would have attacked.
Well, anyway.
Not a good look.
I
didn't, as you can see, I did not wear my Tennessee pullover as I did last week.
That's your protest?
That's my protest.
That's your protest?
I was shamed into not wearing it.
Anything else you guys want to discuss?
That's a lot.
I'm spent. I'm like Kirk Cousins and Mike Zimmer after the Carolina game. I'm spent. I'll say this. There may be other podcasts out there that have more skill guys. Nobody has this podcast culture.
Culture, culture, culture. That's all we are here.
This culture, this podcast, it's parent is spare. Thanks to Northern Lids, northernlids.com. Nobody has this podcast culture.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.